Everyone, welcome back to the Last Word on Sens podcast. As always, I'm your host, Alex Metzger, and it's been a couple weeks since I've gotten able to put out an episode, but we got a really good one coming your way, making his return to the podcast. He's a co-host of the Locked On Penguins podcast. It is the one and only Hunter Hodes. Hunter, thank you so much for joining me. How's it going today, man?
Thank you so much for having me on. It's been a while, and yeah, it's just been crazy with the playoff race. I thought this team would be mailing it in a couple weeks ago, and now they're all of a sudden just 1 point out of a playoff spot. So this has been a whirlwind, and I'm excited to see how it ends in the next 9 days.
Yeah, it's been a pretty crazy couple of weeks in general. I know, like, the last time I recorded a podcast was literally just after the trade deadline, and one of the big things I talked about was obviously the Jake Guentzel trade, which I'm sure we will touch on at some point in this episode. But, you know, my kind of defense on it was, say what you want about the return, but it makes logical sense of why Pittsburgh was trying to trade Jake Guentzel. You know, whether you agree of the exact return, is that what they should have got? Should they got more? Whatever. Trading him at the point they were at made sense. And they have since just rattled off a bunch of wins to put them right back into this playoff picture, which is kind of incredible on its own. And it's made even more incredible that basically every team for this wildcard spot and the last Metro spot does not seem to want to make it. And the Pittsburgh Penguins seem to have as good of a chance as anybody else.
Yeah, it's really just them and the Islanders right now that are actually playing decent hockey in terms of the teams that are alive in this race. I mean, the Flyers have lost 7 in a row. The Capitals have lost 6 in a row. The Red Wings have been really up and down throughout the season. It's mainly just been, you know, the Islanders, who I think have won 4 of the last 5 or 5 of the last 6. The Penguins have won 6 of their last 8. They're on a 4-game winning streak. I thought their season was done when they blew that lead to the Avalanche in Denver a little over a couple weeks ago. They were up 4-0. It was 4-2 heading into the third, and then they just blew it in overtime. And I even put a tanking meme on Twitter. I'm like, well, this is done. They're not going to come back from this. And all of a sudden, since that game, Alex, they've won 6 of their last 7 games, and they've beaten some really good teams too. You go on the road to Madison Square Garden and you dominate the New York Rangers. You beat the Tampa Bay Lightning at home in a crazy game. You beat the Devils. You beat the Capitals. You beat the Hurricanes at home to ensure yourselves a season series split against the Hurricanes. These teams are, for the most part, no slouches. You know, 3 bona fide Stanley Cup contenders in there and a couple of teams that, you know, at the time that you were battling for a playoff spot with, and all these wins came in regulation. You're not giving away points to any of these teams. And it's just been a whirlwind, to be honest. I mean, I was against the Jake Guentzel trade for a long time. But once it was clear to me that they were falling at the time further out of the race, I kind of just resigned myself to the fact that they were going to move him. I wasn't particularly crazy about the return just because you don't know how these prospects are going to work out. And in my opinion, I thought Carolina had better prospects than you could have gotten. For example, one of Scott Morrow or Jackson Blake or Bradley Nadeau. I would have loved to get one of those guys. But even Michael Bunting, I didn't think too much of him in the trade. $4.5 million, I thought he was kind of overpaid based on what he was doing with the Hurricanes. But he has quickly become one of the Penguins' best players since the trade. 5 goals, 13 points in 16 games. His last goal was the biggest goal of the Penguins' season to date, and has been a natural fit on the second line with Evgeny Malkin. He's brought a dimension to the team that they've really lacked ever since Patrick Hornquist left. And I make that comparison gently because no one is ever going to be prime Patrick Hornquist. I mean, I compare Hornquist to a modern-day Tomas Holmstrom. Bunting is never going to be that, but he is someone that can really live around that net front area and just kind of be a rat in a way. And again, that's the type of player that the Penguins really haven't had in quite some time, a player that can really piss off an opposing goaltender and make life a living hell. And he's been doing that ever since being acquired by the Penguins.
Yeah, it's funny too, because I saw when you see that fit, I think I was pretty critical of Bunting kind of being what seemed like a main piece coming back in the trade. When you look at the prospects, as you said, like, and I didn't really agree with that in terms of, I understood, you know, Pittsburgh probably wasn't going to be able to afford Guentzel's next contract. And if they could, it was going to be at the cost of moving some other big pieces out too, right? Which, okay, at that point, you then shift off. I looked at Bunting, and everything you just described is what I watched him do while he was with the Toronto Maple Leafs as well. And It's always surprised me that it just did not seem to fit in Carolina. So I am happy for the player himself, who kind of carved out, you know, like when he came over to Toronto, he was not a very known player. Obviously gets stapled alongside Austin Matthews and gets a bunch of points that people go, well, yeah, it's because he's alongside Austin Matthews. Like, yep, that's fair. But also you have players in both Crosby, but even more so Malkin, that I think he is the perfect fit with, because, you know, when, as Malkin's getting up there in age now, and obviously he's what, 36, 37, I want to say, he's been relatively healthy recently, which is good, but you want to try and take as much of the pressure points off of him, I feel like, as you can. And Malkin's so naturally skilled that if you can give him a grinder like Bunting to go, as you said, just be in front of the net, be in the corners, piss people off, it allows Malkin to freeze Malkin up to go do some other stuff that includes more skill with the puck.
It's one of the main reasons why Gino has been one of their best players over the last few weeks. A big reason for his struggles this season, and why you've seen people say that he's washed, in quotation marks, he's never been washed, by the way, is because of the line mates that he's had. Riley Smith, I liked the move at the time, and they had instant chemistry at the start of the season, but it went away really quickly, and he just hasn't been a good fit for the Penguins overall. I wouldn't be surprised if he was moved during the offseason. You've had guys like Colin White on his line at times this year. It's been a mess for him. And the fact that you look at his numbers right now overall, and you're still getting, 60 points from a second line center. Yeah, 25 goals, 62 points from a second line center who is 37 years old. I will take that type of a production from Evgeny Malkin any day of the week. You know, part of it I do think is his parents being back in town for the first time in a few years. That's awesome. But he's always been at least trying to produce offense, but no one has been able to finish his chances. And you're seeing that with Bunting. He's been able to finish off the chances that Gino's creating. And when Gino's creating his own chances, the puck is now going in the back of the net. I think he had one of his finest performances of the year against Tampa Bay over the weekend. And yeah, I mean, having him play with Bunting and then Raquel, I think, has also woken up a little bit over the last couple of weeks. It has the makings of a really solid second line, and the expected goals to numbers, have been really good. I mean, they're hovering a little over 60% right now over the last several games. I know it's a small sample size, but that line is very much humming right now.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of, you know, what this Pittsburgh team, at least from an outside perspective, seemed to need throughout the year, because it felt like every 2 weeks you'd be hearing about Pittsburgh, and Sidney Crosby would be doing his thing and having a phenomenal season. And then outside of that, I'd go, yeah, but they've lost three of their last five games, or they're 2-3-1 in their last six or whatever. It's like, oh, well, that's not great then. And it's just nice to see some of that depth come together, because again, from a bit of an outside perspective, I really thought what Kyle Dubas did this summer made some sense. You know, like I thought he identified guys that were kind of cheap, obviously outside of Erik Karlsson. He goes with a big swing on Erik Karlsson. But when you're looking up front, you know, like I didn't mind bringing in guys like Riley Smith, even if he hasn't worked out, even, you know, guys like Colin White at the depth of that lineup. He shouldn't be playing on your second line, but as a fourth line player, there's some give and take there, right? So it's nice to see a couple of those moves working out. And I'd like to get your take as well on the goaltending situation in Pittsburgh and your thoughts on someone like Tristan Jarry this year, because I haven't really been able to get a kind of sense on him. I kind of feel like every time I watch him, he's not stealing games, he's not costing them games either, but then the overall just sentiment I feel like behind Jarry has never been maybe where I think it should be. What has been your opinion on the Pens goaltending in general, but also Tristan Jarry this year?
Yeah, I mean, he struggled out of the gate in October, had a really dreadful month overall, but rebounded really nicely in November, December, even January. You know, the talk's always been out there that, oh, he flips into a different goalie in January. Well, I wouldn't say that. I would say he flips into a different goalie a little later on in the season when the game started to get even more important. February, he was still but March is when it really went downhill for him. He had by far, I think, his worst month of the season, was costing the Penguins games, just giving up a lot of weak goals. And that's when Mike Sullivan decided to give Alex Nedeljkovic a few more starts. And you're seeing the reward for that right now, or the benefit, excuse me, of that. 6-0-2 in his last eight starts. He's been a major reason as for why the Penguins have clawed their way back into this race. Has he had a couple of games where he's given up some bad goals? Sure, but he's played at a higher level than Jarry over the last 4 to 5 weeks. And that's what's important for the Penguins right now, is just because they're in the playoff race and you have to go with the players that give you the best chance to win on a nightly basis. And right now, that is Nedeljkovic over Jarry. That said, I think they are going to have to give Jarry a game before the end of the season, because I don't want him ice cold heading into a potential playoff series against Carolina, New York, Boston, whoever it is that you play in the first round. Because if you don't start him in any of these games, it'll have been over a month, Alex, since he last played. And I just don't want him that cold heading into a playoff series, because chances are the Penguins are going to need both goalies if they do want to go on a deep run this summer, even though as unlikely as it is, even if they get in, you're still going to need both of those goalies. I think Tristan, he's shown an ability to play at a high level in the NHL. It's just been the consistency issue with me. He hasn't been able to do it throughout an entire season. And even, some of it is injury related, but this year he's been fully healthy. He hasn't even gotten hurt. And he just hasn't been able to get over the hump and stop the bleeding when it happens. You know, last year it happened around February. This year it happened around March. And he kind of just spirals when the games get a little too important. And that's going to be something that the Penguins are going to have to figure out this summer. You have Joel Blomqvist coming up from the AHL. Could he be NHL ready? That's a question they have to ask themselves. Do they want to re-sign Alex Nedeljkovic? It's dicey because he's going to be getting a pretty big raise, and I'm not sure the Penguins want to pay that. The Penguins also still have 4 more years left on this contract with Jarry at a little over $5 million. It's a big question that they're going to have to answer this summer. So right now, I'm fine riding Nedeljkovic, but I still think they're going to have to give Jarry at least one start in these final five games to make sure that he's ready for the playoffs if they get in.
Yeah, it's been kind of crazy how much they've been riding Nedeljkovic in the recent stretch here. Like, I feel like if you told basically any casual fan, like, take a random guess at the splits that have been over the past 10 games, not too many would have. I think it's been Nedeljkovic for, is it 10 straight here, 9 straight? Yeah, so it's been quite the run here, obviously. And but I mean, fair enough. Like, when you start winning with him in net, why would you go back? I definitely agree. I think you got to be using Jarry at some point. I do understand that if it's going to come down to maybe the last game of the season, you might have to make a tough decision about whether you play him or not. And maybe you do just ride with the hot hand. But he's been a big part, Nedeljkovic, that is, I think, has kind of been a big part of one of the reasons I was still really bullish on the Pittsburgh Penguins making the playoffs as recently as a week ago. Is I looked at their schedule and they were fresh off of taking 3 of 4 points from the Columbus Blue Jackets, which overall is a pretty good weekend, but I think they probably would have liked to win instead of losing in the shootout on the Saturday there. But then they were playing the Rangers, who are obviously one of the best teams in the league this year. They're playing the Devils, who are always a dangerous team, even if they've struggled this year. The Capitals, who have been in the playoff picture all year long. The Lightning, who are red hot right now as well. And then obviously they have the Leafs, Red Wings, Bruins, Predators, Islanders coming up. So I'm like, that's a really, really tough schedule. Well, you had already touched on it. They beat the Rangers 5-2. They beat the Devils 6-3. They beat the Capitals 4-1 in an absolutely massive game. And then they beat the Red Hot Lightning 5-4 on Saturday night. They have 5 games left here. I would not call any of these games easy, but given their opponents, there are some huge swing games here with the Red Wings and the Islanders coming up.
Right. No, and I actually prefer the schedule is like this. We all saw what happened at the end of last season. All they had to do, Alex, was beat the Blackhawks and the Blue Jackets, and they would go to the playoffs. And the Florida Panthers wouldn't even have gotten in and then gone to the Stanley Cup final. But they weren't able to beat a Blackhawks team that was legitimately trying to lose games for Connor Bedard. It ended up not mattering in any way that they won that game because they still got Bedard. And then the Penguins still lost the Blue Jackets that next game, even though that game really meant nothing at that point anyway. So I'm actually glad that they are playing good teams to end the season. I said it on my show today with Patrick Dan, my co-host for Locked On Penguins. You got to fight for your right to party. I'm quoting the Beastie Boys yet again. And you want to get to the playoffs? You got to go through teams that are either have clinched playoff spots or are trying to clinch playoff spots just like you. These are the type of games that you get up for. Sometimes, you know, it feels weird to even say this, but it can maybe be a bit harder to get up for a team like the Blackhawks, even in that situation. But I mean, it shouldn't, but you know, sometimes that's maybe how players feel. But you know, you're playing 5 really sound teams here that could all be in the playoffs by the end of next week. And this Maple Leafs game, it's still a pretty big game overall. I mean, if the Penguins win, if you look at the money puck odds, 54.7% odds that the Penguins win in regulation or in overtime. They just have to win regardless. But this game, it doesn't mean that much to the Maple Leafs. I mean, sure, they're maybe trying to steal home ice from the Panthers, but they're also 5 points back, having two games in hand. You have the Red Wings game. You got to win that one in regulation. You can't be giving away points to a team like that. Staying with the Islanders, I said on my show today, if you can go 4-1 in these five games and win the Islanders game and the Red Wings game in regulation, that should be good enough to get you into the playoffs. I'll have plenty of time to do the what-if game if this team ends up missing the playoffs, whether it's by a point or two or maybe more, because they've left so many points on the table this year. Alex, I mean, you mentioned that Columbus game. They blew a two-goal lead in the third period. If they had won that game, they'd be in the final playoff spot right now because they have the tiebreaker over all these teams. If they had not blown that game against the Avalanche, they'd be on an 8-game winning streak right now, and they would be up on the Red Wings by a point for that final playoff spot. And actually, they would be tied with the Islanders right now for third. They would be in third in the Metro right now. That's just how slim the margin has been, and how that's just a taste of some of the leads that they have blown in the third period to either get no points or 1 point. They should very comfortably be in a playoff spot right now if they had just held 4-5 multi-goal leads in the third period. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously I think a lot of teams can do that what if. I know Islanders fans are probably doing something similar of what if we brought in Patrick Waugh sooner and all that stuff. But it just goes to show how in the NHL, they're just when you're a team that is not a perennial contender, and that's, you know, what Pittsburgh was that for a number of years, but are no longer that. Every little game matters. Like every game of all 82 matter because those little points end up adding up over the year, right? And same goes the other way too. I'm sure there's been a couple games where the Pittsburgh Penguins have, you know, stolen a point or maybe even two out of a third period comeback that they absolutely did not belong to have, right? So, but yeah, like it's, I think it is an interesting theory of would you rather be playing the good teams on the way down the stretch or, you know, how much does the matchups actually mean? And I can kind of get behind the thinking of, you know, to be the best, you got to beat the best. And that's not particularly the case here, but it is the same idea of you want to, once you're in the playoffs, you believe that you have a chance to beat anyone in the playoffs. So you should go out and beat those teams on your way to get there and feel good about your game. And I think, you know, to your point last year of whether it's hard to get up for games against a team as bad as Chicago. I don't even know if it's about getting up to it in terms of motivation, but I wonder if it's more pressure than motivation, where the Pittsburgh Penguins right now, you know, yes, they were picked to go to the playoffs by a lot of people before the season, but it started so poorly from them. There's not much pressure on this team in terms of, at least externally, in my opinion. If they make it, it will be a feel-good story more than how did they miss? Because it looked destined that they were going to miss as early as a month ago, 3 weeks ago, right? Whereas last year, they were supposed to make it. It was supposed to be the year they make it. The Florida Panthers were the opposite shoe there. They were the ones storming back, had to win every single game just to make it. So I almost wonder if this year having less pressure and playing more freely is going to help a team like the Pittsburgh Penguins when it comes to this playoff race.
I don't disagree with you, to say the least. I mean, they were 9 points out 2 weeks ago. And correct me if I'm wrong, that if they make the playoffs, that's going to go down in NHL history as one of the largest comebacks with such little time left in terms of how far back you are points-wise, like 9 points back. I believe that it's somewhere around there in terms of NHL history. And yeah, I mean, this team was left for dead a couple of weeks ago. I even said on my show, they surrendered the two leads to the Stars and Avalanche in their season after that Western swing. You had other people that cover the team say the same exact thing. And what have they done since? Well, just a whole lot of winning. And the way they've played the last 2-3 weeks, and I just wondered to myself, where has this been for the entire season? And then I play the what-if game like, wow, if you play like this for most of the season, you might still have Jake Guentzel here. Really, like they probably don't even trade Jake at that point. But, you know, we'll have time for what ifs well down the road. But, you know, if they do get in, it is going to be a feel good story. But B, I think it's also going to have a lot of people, I guess, excited, even outside of, you know, Penguins fans and people who cover the team and organization as a whole. It's going to have people, I guess excited just because you get to see another year where Sidney Crosby is in the playoffs. I know some people may have felt differently several years ago when, you know, Sid was, I think, definitely more hated by some more rival fans. But I think now with how he's 36 and is having this type of season where he's closing in on 90 points despite being 36, he's starting to get more Hart Trophy love, which, in my opinion, I don't think I would vote for him to win the Hart Trophy. If you want to have him be a finalist, that's a different story. I'll listen to you on that. I'm not going to vote him for him to win the Hart. But that's going to get a lot of people excited because you want to see one of the all-time greats have at least one more shot of trying to do something in the playoffs. Yeah, he's won all you could at the NHL level, 3 Stanley Cups, 2 Conn Smythes, numerous Harts, numerous Art Rosses, Ted Lindsays, Olympic golds, everything. But it's still a disservice to me, in my opinion, if you can't get this team into the playoffs over so many of these mediocre to the flat out bad teams in the race. Like, I look at the Flyers. That team shouldn't be in the playoff race, but John Tortorella's done a great job. I look at the Capitals. They have 3 forwards, a couple decent defensemen, and a goalie who plays his tail off. Their forward group is their forward depth is terrible. The Red Wings, I can at least see it because their top 6 is pretty decent. I like their forward group overall, but defensively outside of Seider, I don't really think there's that much there. And the Islanders, I mean, they were in this position last year. So them being here is not a surprise to me. Either I don't think they're going to go anywhere, but this conference, when you look at it, it's so mediocre outside of a few teams where it's like, you got to get in this year when the conference is like this.
Yeah, and I think this is a good way because I wanted to start kind of moving towards the rest of the conference and especially the Metro Division and looking at some of these other teams. And even at the top of the Eastern Conference this year, I really don't feel like the high-end talent has been quite as relevant as maybe it has been in past years, where you look like obviously the Rangers and the Hurricanes are both very, very good teams. And if they make a deep run, no one's going to be surprised. But like, I think this Carolina Hurricanes team, don't get me wrong. I love what they did at the deadline, adding guys like Gensel and even Kuznetsov has been, you know, paying off well for them. But I don't think it's the most stacked Hurricanes team we've ever seen. And, you know, the Rangers, they have a lot of high-end talent, but I'm still a little worried about the depth of that roster come a playoff series. You look in the Atlantic Division, the Boston Bruins have a really good record this year. I'm not sold until I see it, I guess, in the playoffs that you can go in with without anyone notable really as your first or second line center. And I don't mean that as a total disrespect, but like you lose Bergeron and Krejci and they just didn't really bother to replace them this year. And they're still doing really well, all credit to them. But whether that comes out in the playoff series, I don't know, you know, and then you have Toronto. I like how Toronto's built, but again, I don't think this is the greatest team they've had in years compared to years past. You look at the Florida Panthers. I really thought the Florida Panthers were going to be the ones to come out of the East, and they still might be, but they have really struggled as of late too. So, and then Tampa obviously is super hot right now, but Tampa's had their struggles this year as well. So I think just overall in this conference, there is a spot for any team to make it. They can go on a run. And I think Pittsburgh maybe defines that more than some of these other teams, because I actually wanted to get your opinion on if it wasn't Pittsburgh, who would you rather see in these playoff spots? Because I ranked them myself. I have Pittsburgh 1 because I think it would be the most fun. As you said, I want to see Crosby and I want to see Malkin back in the playoffs. Playoff Malkin's always a different animal and it's great. I also personally want to see Erik Karlsson back in the playoffs as a Sens fan. And I know I'm sure a lot of Sens fans would. I have the Islanders 2. And the reason I have the Islanders 2 is, as you mentioned, they've been there before, and I think that out of all teams in the, if they make the playoffs, they could give a team a scare, and that's kind of what I want to see, you know, more than anything else, where I have the Capitals dead last in my list here, because I just don't think the Capitals are going to beat anyone if they make it in, you know, like, credit to them for making it this close. This team is bad. Like, that Capitals team stinks. So it's not even like Ovechkin has been, like, he's been scoring a bunch of goals recently, but he's a net negative in value, I would say, in the ice. And then in the middle there, so I have Pittsburgh, the Islanders, those would be my top two in whatever order you want. And then I have Detroit 3. I think it would be a cool story, see Detroit back in the playoffs. Agree with you. I think the top end talent on that team is really good. I'm really scared about the depth. And then I have Philly 4 because it'd be a cool enough story, but I just don't think Philly's going to get anywhere if they make the playoffs. So that's kind of my list, if you have any thoughts on any of those 5 teams.
Yeah, I mean, obviously for me, you know, Penguins, especially for content purposes, I would love more playoff content for the show, and nothing beats the team that you follow or cover playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Number two, I am going to go Detroit. It's been a while since they made the Stanley Cup playoffs, and I think the league is better when a team like the Red Wings is in the playoffs. They have one of the best fan bases in the NHL. They'll be rocking, I almost said Joe Louis Arena for a second, they'll be rocking Little Caesars Arena, excuse me, pretty hard just because, you know, again, it's just been a long time since that team has been in the playoffs. Just seeing the octopus probably thrown on the ice will bring back some of the memories of my childhood. But, and, you know, I like their top six quite a bit. You know, Alex Lyon's been playing also really decent in goal as of late, but I just get worried about their defense outside of Mo Sider. I just don't really see a lot there. I think it's just kind of an average group outside of Sider. I would go the Islanders, number three. They're like a cockroach. You think you kill them, but then more just appear. That's how I describe the Islanders. So, and I think that's how I can end that, to be honest. The Flyers and Caps, 4 or 5, you can interchange them. Those two teams, they're just happy to be here. I mean, no one expected the Flyers to even be in this position. And you can tell by watching them that they're gassed. I mean, it's taken a lot out of them to even get to this point. They're also not getting the saves from their goalies. A lot of their goal scoring is dried up. And you can say the same about the Capitals right now too. Charlie Lindgren, who has been great all year, he hasn't been good over these last few games. And the Capitals are also not scoring that much either, which, I mean, I'm not too surprised by that, because outside of Dylan Strome, Tom Wilson, Alex Ovechkin, the Capitals really don't have a forward that truly scares you. I mean, if you want to throw Max Pacioretty in there, fine, but this is also a different version of Max Pacioretty. So I would put those two at the very end of my list overall.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, especially with the Capitals, and I'll try not to harp on it too much more, but like they're so old. Like, just watching them, it just looks like a bunch of old dudes skating around on the ice. And I mean, most of the team, like the core of the team, are in their mid to late 30s. So it does make sense. And again, credit to them for making it. But yeah, I think I agree, where I think it would be Detroit would be a cool story. The Islanders, I wouldn't mind seeing there. You know, like I'm kind of indifferent on that one. But I think it would be really cool to see Pittsburgh there as well. So I guess that leaves one more question that I want to ask. And obviously, making the playoffs is kind of all that matters to the team, and I'm sure the fans as well. But get a little greedy here too. Let's say they make the playoffs, and you have the choice of if they are going to be wild card 2 and have to face one of the division winners, or would you rather the Metro spot 3 and have to face what is looking like it will be the Carolina Hurricanes at this point?
See, it's a good question. I know a lot of people will say the Rangers, because, I mean, they do match up pretty well with them, and the Penguins, I'll take this to my grave, they should have won that series a couple of years ago if they would have just gotten a save from Louis Domingue in Game 5 or Game 6. Heck, they had the Rangers on the ropes in Game 5 until Sid got knocked out by Jacob Trouba. But, you know, I digress on that. But I'm kind of going to say, and this may sound weird, I think the Hurricanes might be the better matchup over the Rangers. And I know the Hurricanes are really scary. This is probably one of their better teams of the Rod Brind'Amour era. But I think their system is really beatable in the playoffs. I'm kind of at the I want to see it to believe it when it comes to the Hurricanes. It's a really grueling style of play that they do during the regular season, and it can be coached against in the playoffs. And for as much as I have harped on Mike Sullivan this year for the lineup decisions, some of the coaching blunders that he's had, if you give him time to prepare for a particular opponent, he can figure out ways to take away your best players and figure out ways to get through that system or even shut down that system. And with the way they played Carolina a few weeks ago, where the Penguins, I thought, played one of their finest games of the season, they did a great job of limiting the Hurricanes. You know, how do I want to say it? The Hurricanes, they don't call them the Carolina Corsis for no reason. They fire a lot of shots from the blue line. And what the Penguins did a great job of, I thought, in my opinion, was when those shots would come in, there wasn't a lot of traffic in front, meaning they were able to box out some of the Carolina forwards to make sure that they're not getting deflections, because the Hurricanes really love getting those deflections around that net front area and getting a lot of garbage goals. And by boxing out those players and boxing out those plays, the Penguins, they were able to get easy saves from Alex Nedeljkovic in that game. If you can make it easy on your goaltender and clear the net front, I do think the Penguins can beat the Hurricanes in a seven-game series. It's a matter of, can they play at a consistent level to beat this Hurricanes team and also not have them hurt you off the rush? I do think the Hurricanes, they can hurt you off the rush, but their system, it's definitely more grueling compared to other teams. And I do think the Penguins, they have the personnel to beat them. It's still going to be hard, but I would still actually favor the Hurricanes to who I would rather play over a team like the Rangers, who I mean the Penguins have played them really tough in all three games, but I just get really scared of them off the rush and with the level that Artemi Panarin is playing at this year especially.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, and I think what maybe scares me about the Hurricanes more this year than in years past, where I definitely would agree, where I think, especially if you're just looking at them analytically, I think that the Hurricanes are maybe a bit of an inflated monster. They're obviously a very good team. They're very well coached, but they play that dump and chase style of hockey maybe too frequently, and I kind of just worry that adding guys like Gensel and Kuznetsov will make them more dangerous on being able to kind of capitalize on some of those chances, because this year especially, like, they're getting a lot of shots, but a lot of quality shots as well, which I think is a little worrying now that they've made those deadline pickups. They're second in the league at 5-on-5 expected goals for per 60, behind only the Edmonton Oilers. They're up there with the Devils, the Penguins, and the Predators. So a pretty good team. And then Leafs, Panthers, Kings are also in there, and Dallas and Colorado. So a lot of the teams you would consider pretty elite offensively, maybe hold out Nashville in there, but Nashville's been playing very well too, are up in that kind of range with the Carolina Hurricanes. And that might be the one place where I kind of worry. But on the flip side of it, you want to talk about making life easy for you. I'm not going to trust Freddie Anderson in a playoff series. And I'm not going to trust really anyone that the Carolina Hurricanes have in a playoff series, where I think the last thing I would want to do is probably go face Igor Shesterkin if I don't have to. Like, and I know Shesterkin hasn't had the greatest of years, but he's been much improved recently, and he has that high-end talent where he can easily steal a series when needed. I still think the ideal situation, which doesn't look like it will happen, but is if somehow the Boston Bruins could pass the New York Rangers and the Penguins could actually flip onto the other side and play a team like the Bruins. Now, their goaltending's not easy either. You want to talk about running into a two-headed monster. Swayman and Ullmark in there, good night. But it's interesting because, yeah, it looks more and more likely like the two options will be Carolina and New York. And I think there is a fine enough argument to be made about which one the Penguins should rather prefer. I think that if you're very confident in the overall matchup that you have, it would be Carolina. If you're talking a little more generally, I as weird as it sounds, because New York is the higher in the standings, I like Carolina as an overall team a little bit more than I like New York. But I mean, I think it's more than fair to say too, they're both very scary lineups. Yeah. Up and down.
It's, you pick a coin, honestly. It really is a coin flip for that. I think I would, by the slimmest of margins, prefer playing Carolina over the Rangers. I think a couple years ago, my answer would be different because the Penguins matched up even better against the Rangers a couple years ago, as I said. But I think this year, I would still rather just a little bit go against Carolina. And I think the revenge factor would be really a fun storyline with Gensel going up against his former team and then Bunting as well. And it would just make for a really fun series in general. I think it's a series that I've been wanting to see for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, the storyline of it, of two guys being traded for each other with other pieces involved, obviously, but Bunting and then Gensel being the much bigger one going against their former team would be a really cool thing to see. So I'm all here to hope for it. It'll be a great game to watch tonight too, between Pittsburgh and Toronto. I'm really looking forward to turning that one on, and honestly watching a lot of the Pittsburgh games down the road here. It's funny, I probably shouldn't be admitting this on a Sens-based podcast, but there's a very, very good chance that I watch more Penguins games for the remainder of this year than I do Senators games down the stretch. And that just purely has to do with where they are in the standings. But honestly, like, I'm really excited to watch all five remaining matchups from Pittsburgh's perspective, because I think the Maple Leafs, Bruins, and Predators are obviously all big games for Pittsburgh, but are all really good teams that they're going to be facing as well and should be good hockey. And then you obviously have Detroit and the Islanders, which, I mean, the matchups for that could be huge. I'm thinking right now about how cool it would be if it Wednesday, April 17th, Islanders Penguins comes down to one wins, one's out of the playoffs. I'm sure I would love that as a neutral spectator a little more, but just the fact that that could be a case is a very tempting sensation for me.
Yeah. Have you seen the amount of times the Islanders have broken the Penguins' hearts over the years? This isn't just 1993 here, Alex. This is back in the 70s as well. So the Islanders, they have done so many horrifying things to the Pittsburgh Penguins franchise. We don't even have to bring up those two series that I even mentioned. We can just bring up the two series that I saw them lose just a few years ago. I mean, they got swept in one, and then Tristan Jarry sunk in the next series, and then they lost that one. That series they won back was about a little over a decade ago, what feels like ancient history at this point. So no, I really hope it does not come down to that final game, but knowing the Penguins' luck, it probably will. And of course, it has to be on the freaking island.
Yep. And I mean, hey, you want to talk about content and storylines. There would be no shortage of it if it happens to be that way. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really happy we got to kind of break down this wild card picture and the Pittsburgh Penguins as a whole. Plug some stuff. Where can people find you and all your work?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter or X, if you call it that now, at Hunter Hodes. I co-host the Locked On Penguins podcast. Wherever you can find podcasts, Apple, Spotify, YouTube, Amazon Music, Sirius, XM Radio, all that good stuff with my good friend Patrick Damp. You can follow him on Twitter at Center for Wet. And my full-time job, I write for thespun.com. I just do a bunch of breaking news articles each day. So that's where you can really find me and find the show.
Awesome. Yeah, can't recommend checking it out enough. And thank you again, Hunter, for joining me.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on.
Huge thanks to Hunter for joining me today, and I hope everyone enjoyed the podcast, and lots more coming out in the next couple of weeks. I know the Sens season's wrapping up here. I'm going to have a Sens-based one out this week as well. Brandon from Sens Talk is joining me, and we will be breaking down the season, and then I also have a couple other guests I'm pretty excited to have on the podcast in the next couple of weeks as well. And then around this time next week, I'll be doing my full NHL playoff preview too. So make sure you look out for that. As always, you can find this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all that stuff. And you can follow the podcast at lastwordonsens.com or lastwordonsens on Twitter. And then also myself at NHL Sens and stuff. You can find all my work at lastwordonhockey.com. Thank you everyone so much for listening. I'll talk to you all next time.